Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Ron Schmidt as my special expert guest. Ron Schmidt, ND, is a graduate of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and the National College of Naturopathic Medicine. Ron has practiced naturopathic medicine since 1981 and taught at all four accredited American naturopathic medical schools. He served for 2 years as chief medical officer and clinic director at the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine. Dr. Ron is the author of two books, Traditional Foods Are Your Best Medicine and The Untold Story of Milk, as well as numerous journal articles. His online supplements company, Dr. Ron's Ultra Pure, makes additive-free, 100% pure nutrients, formulas, and special foods. Good morning, Ron, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to this edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning to you, Corey. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
Ron, let's get right into it. Your great book, Traditional Foods Are Your Best Medicine, is a mandatory read for my students in the Certified Sport Nutrition Advisor Education Program. It's a fantastic book. It's a classic in the industry. Tell us, what inspired you to write this book?
Thank you very much for your compliments. Weston Price's work and Francis Pottinger's work were the primary inspirations, I would say. Of course, their work is kept alive by the Price-Pottinger Nutrition Foundation and now the Weston A. Price Foundation as well. And studying Price's work in the 70s and early 80s led me to write my book in 1986 because my medical practice was based on his work, really. And my whole understanding of human nutrition is grounded in Price's and Pottinger's studies in anthropology of native cultures throughout the world.
Now, what are some of the key principles that you reveal in this timeless classic? Maybe you could break it down into just simple terms, because the book is loaded with some very powerful concepts. But what are some of the most important ones that you think people need to understand?
Native people throughout the world, before the introduction of what they called the white man's foods, the foods of commerce, the foods of civilization, white flour, sugar, coffee and sweets and candy and the various things that were shipped around the world to barter trade with native people when they first were introduced to Western ways. Before these foods were introduced, people lived on the foods that were indigenous to their area. Invariably, these were animal foods complemented by typically a few vegetables. You would find some cultures that had modernized somewhat since the dawn of agriculture, including some grain products and some raw dairy products, but most of the cultures that Price studied were pre-agricultural, and pre-agricultural cultures throughout the world lived on animal food and a few vegetables, mostly. Those foods were unrefined in their natural state, and that really constitutes the natural human diet. And understanding the details of that really is what one gets from looking at native cultures throughout the world and the differences between different ones depending on climate and ethnic background and so forth. There are lots of details, but in broad strokes, that's the general principle.
As you know, one of the greatest controversies in nutrition is whether one should take a vegan or vegetarian approach or mix plant and animals together. I think in conclusion in the book, you're suggesting that we should at least consume fish, and I agree, but what is your position that you stand on in terms of defending that concept when you're speaking to a vegetarian or a vegan who believes that eating animals in any form is not ideal?
People who believe that, what you just said, are so misinformed and brainwashed that it's almost not worth talking to them because they don't understand anything. So I don't really try to convince them. Anyone who looks objectively at all at the evidence of anthropology, and particularly Price's work, which is more thorough than anyone else's, there's just no question but that every native culture in the history of the world essentially ate all the animals they could get. And they did that because their reproductive ability and their health depended upon it. I realize that there's debate and controversy, but in my opinion, the debate and controversy is grounded in ignorance. and the ignorance is on the part of the people who hold that a vegetarian diet is reasonable.
Now, in today's world, there's not a lot of good food available unless you're, you know, living in the woods or close to the ocean, like maybe a Fijian fisherman. So how do we in the modern world get access to whole food, and how do we service the body with the nutrition that we require to stay well?
It's really not that difficult to get good food. Most towns in America today have supermarkets that carry organic vegetables, and one can go in and get various kinds of greens and other vegetables that have been grown without poisons. Many, many markets now have naturally raised meats, fowl, meat. Of course, there's fish. One needs to be somewhat knowledgeable about what species are most free of mercury and so forth with fish, but it's not that hard to go into a market and find meat that's been raised without pesticides and hormones and so forth. So meat and vegetables are really quite adequate. It's nice to have raw dairy products also. Of course, that's been made difficult by an essentially fascist government that has outlawed raw dairy in most states. That's another story. But you can get by on meat and vegetables, and actually you can get by very well. So it's really not that difficult with a simple plan that's accurate as far as fulfilling human needs. It's wise to complement those foods with the right supplement. That's why we do that. That's why we import very special cod liver oil from Norway and organs and glands, freeze-dried organs and glands from New Zealand and so forth to complement nutrition. But basically, meat, fish, and vegetables, salad greens, fermented vegetables, constitutes a great diet. Everything else is superfluous. In fact, most other things actually do more harm than good.
I'm sure you've heard the term, we are what we eats. Now, with that in mind, tell us how soil fertility and animal health affect our health as humans are the highest on the food chain.
Well, the whole question of soil fertility and animal health, it's very well established in the literature about organic agriculture, the historical work from 50 and 75 and 100 years ago about the importance of living soil and the importance for animal health, the dependence of animal health upon the nutrients in the soil. And of course, this is true for people also. The people who eat the animals and who eat the plants are dependent on the health of the soil also. The reason that people have degenerated to the point that they have in terms of health, which is, I think, obvious if you take an objective look at the disease. They don't call these diseases that people suffer from today the diseases of civilization for nothing. The reason is that they are indeed diseases that have gained a foothold and multiplied with civilization. And civilization is basically correlated with decline of the soil, particularly in the last 100 years, just basically burning up the soil and putting a lot of chemicals back in and winding up with foods that are more and more degenerated and more diseased. It's really a given that you can't have healthy people without healthy animals and healthy soil. And what we're seeing now is a degeneration. Of course, Bryce's book, 1939, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. One might add mental degeneration as well. The mental capacity of people has changed dramatically in the last 50 or 75 years, as well as the physical capacity.
So as a naturopath focusing on food and nutrition, what are your thoughts on the importance of physical exercise and recreational sport?
I love recreational sport. It's great fun. That's what it should be. Sometimes it's fun to work out in the gym for a few months, and sometimes it's fun to play a lot of tennis, and sometimes it's fun to go for a lot of walks and runs. I think there's some difficulties there in that there's an overemphasis on exercise. People think that if they work out for an hour every day, they're going to be healthy. And that makes for an underemphasis on food and a lack of understanding of what to eat, what constitutes a really healthy diet, as well as a lack of the willpower to implement that. So you have a situation where people are exercising like the devil and really not getting anything near out of it of what they should because of a lack of attention to proper nutrition. But that said, exercise and sports are great, and they should be fun, and we should try to plan our lives in ways that exercise and sports are a natural part. part of life, which is difficult if you're working 10 hours of the day at a job you don't like and commuting an hour each way back and forth. So where do you start in order to work out a life where exercise and sports make sense and is a natural part of it? Now, that's the essential problem, really, that a lot of people, I think, need to try to solve in order to be healthier and happier.
Very good. Okay, yeah, Ron, I'm a master's athlete, and I compete in track and field as a hammer thrower and some natural bodybuilding, and I've always played sports for fun, and I recall reading in Traditional Foods Are Your Best Medicine that you said that sports gotten out of control, that we're spending too much time worshiping the heroes and not actually playing any sport ourselves. So that really stood out in my mind, and I'm really glad that you emphasize the fact that sport is about having fun and not competing to try and win at any cost. Would you say that there is a business component that ties in with that as well in today's business world? In other words, in business, competing at any cost for the sole ambition of defeating your opponent and winning, like athletes do in sport, they take steroids, they injure people, they'll violate rules just to win. And I think that there's a lot of truth in this that's also conveyed over in the business world.
Well, you know, I think that this, all of this revolves around simple morality. If you grow up right, you learn to consider other people's feelings and what's right and wrong, and you basically do what's right in any given situation. And if that's the case, then in business, you treat people fairly, and you do your best to provide a good service, and you know you should make money for that, and that's fair. Just like when you play a sport, you play hard and you play to win, and you respect what your opponent is doing as well. So it's fair all the way around, and I think that too many people don't really have that, don't really grow up with that. It's very hard. We don't have the examples that we had 50 years ago. We have a media situation where you don't see much in print media, much less online, that holds to those kind of ideals. And that's, I think, why we have the situations that we do in business, in sport, in politics, all the same. Like, as you say, win at any cost, as opposed to do your best and the old saying, it's not whether you win or lose, but how you play the game, as opposed to winning is everything. And I think it's obvious where you and I stand on that.
Fantastic. You know, one of the first things that Tracy and I did when we arrived in California was purchase and drink a pint of raw milk from Whole Foods Market. Now, I've read your book, The Untold Story of Milk. It's a brilliant presentation, and it answers so many questions about milk and its history. But can you tell us why raw milk is better than drinking pasteurized milk?
Raw milk that has come from healthy, carefully fed animals is a wonderful food, full of enzymes and all of the things that natural foods contain when they haven't been processed and adulterated. Your typical pasteurized milk that you find in the store comes from confinement animals that have not been out at pasture, and it's gone through 3 or 4 miles of plastic and steel tubing at the milk plant, been broken down into all of its constituent parts, scrubbed, cleaned, pasteurized, put back together into the 1,000 different dairy products you see in the store. Now, you might call that food. I don't. That's not food suited for my human body. The human body is suited for food as nature presents it to us, as it comes from the animal or from the field or from the tree. We're not designed to live on foods that come out of factories, and that's why people are dying like flies from these dread chronic diseases that people get today, which they didn't get, incidentally, in the cultures that Weston Price studied until the introduction of processed foods. You might check out the Organic Pastures website. Organic Pastures and Clarifale Dairy are the two dairies in California that supply raw milk to the stores all over California. And they are being harassed royally by the California Department of Agriculture, which is attempting to put them out of business the way they put all the other raw milk farmers out of business over the last 50 years, including Altadena in the Los Angeles area. And if the Department of Agriculture has their way, they will drive these two dairies out of business, and there will be no more raw milk in California. There are court battles going on about this right now, and you can read about it at the Organic Pastors website.
Can you tell us a little bit about that story that led to our current state of compromised milk today?
Raw milk got a bad name in the 1800s when the whiskey industry grew up around American cities. America got its whiskey from the Caribbean islands until the War of 1812. And with the War of 1812 and British blockade, they couldn't get the rum in anymore, and basically America started making whiskey near the cities all throughout colonial America. And the byproducts of whiskey making were then fed to dairy cows, which essentially made them produce a lot of inferior milk from sick cows. And that milk was fed to people in the cities. There were problems with it often, and people didn't know the difference between that milk and farm fresh milk. And there was some illness that was caused by that. The pasteurization industry that began to grow up around 1900 used that as an excuse to force compulsory pasteurization throughout the country, used it in their lobbying efforts, used it in their basically bribes and crooked politics to force states throughout the country to outlaw raw milk. That was behind putting 3 million dairy farmers out of business between the end of World War II and the current day. We had 3 million dairy farmers in 1946 with an average of 8 cows each. Now we have less than 100,000 dairy farmers with over 80 cows each, mostly confinement dairies, and no more raw milk. The milk industry was a prime culprit in that. The growing commercial milk industry lobbied hard to create passage of laws that outlawed raw milk. And, of course, they got the medical people on board and the public health authorities, and now they're all unanimously against raw milk. And it's unanimous because if you're part of one of those establishments and you come out in favor of raw milk, you don't have a job the next day. So, of course, they're unanimous. In a nutshell, that's the story on that. Of course, there's 100 pages or so in my book about the details of that story, which really are quite fascinating.
Truly, they are. Now, what about someone who says, Ron, I'm not going to get enough calcium if I don't drink milk, and you're suggesting that maybe I stop drinking milk or stop drinking the refined pasteurized form? I got a couple questions here. Number one, where do people get calcium from? I know you've been asked this a million times. And number two, should an adult today, if they have access to raw milk from healthy cows, make that milk a staple in the diet? Or should we as humans get away from dairy products completely because we're weaned as mammals from the breast and just continue eating, you know, the vegetables, the organic fruits, and the whole wild game, that kind of idea?
Well, it's a popular myth that human beings are not meant to have milk after infancy. You hear that one all the time. But the fact is that around 10,000 years ago, many human beings made the transition to using dairy animals as a source of fresh, raw dairy. And some wonderful, healthy foods were developed from that, rich sources of nutrients that are very difficult to get anywhere else. And people who say, well, no milk after infancy are ignoring that. So if you have an opportunity to avail yourself of quality raw milk, it makes a wonderful part of the diet. On the other hand, it's not strictly necessary, but people who aren't going to use that should be prepared to complement their nutrition with other special foods that will have those nutrients, including calcium. We make a calcium formula that contains raw bone calcium from New Zealand animals, for example, that people can read about on our website. That's a wonderful source of calcium and something that's nicely used in conjunction with raw milk, actually. And of course, cod liver oil for the vitamin D. People used to get lots of vitamin D and vitamin A, which are critical nutrients and should be supplied in large supply in the diet. Natural vitamins A and D from animals, not the synthetic sources that are in most vitamins. But natural vitamin A and D are historically supplied in dairy products from grass-fed animals, which we rarely see anymore. But those are very important nutrients. So cod liver oil, quality cod liver oil, and again, it's always complicated. The cod liver oils in the stores have been stripped of most of the vitamins A and D because it's politically correct to have supplements that don't have much vitamins A and D in them because the synthetic versions are toxic at fairly low levels. That's not true of natural vitamins A and D, and we We make a cod liver oil we import from Norway with the full complement of natural vitamins A and D that it has in nature, and that's a wonderful food to supply these nutrients.
Ron, what is your take on low-fat milk and milk that has lower or less levels of fat in it, like the 2%, the skim milk, that kind of idea, which would obviously have less of the fat-soluble nutrients in it?
I wouldn't drink that if I was starving to death. I think it's garbage. It's inferior milk to start with, and then you're stripping it of vital nutrients. People don't get enough fat. They particularly don't get enough animal fat. Animal fat is healthy, important food as long as it's from healthy animals. And this whole low-fat craze is part of the ignorance that's foisted on people by a medical establishment that knows nothing about nutrition and basically insists on pushing drugs for the drug industry, selling $15 billion worth of cholesterol-lowering drugs every year to attack a problem that isn't really a problem. Cholesterol isn't what's behind heart disease or any other problems. It's refined foods that cause these diseases. And the absence of farm-fresh, quality animal foods that are rich in cholesterol, which are actually the best foods in the world.
You're managing a farm in Connecticut, and you have some livestock there, and you actually drink raw milk from them?
Yes, I have a couple of milk cows, a couple of Jerseys, and we milk them every morning and have fresh milk and make butter and cream and soured milk, yogurt and kefir and things like that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. I envy you. Tell us what your website address is, and maybe you can give us some insight as to what some of your most popular supplements are.
Well, it's drrons.com, D-R-R-O-N-S. No punctuation, just drrons.com. And what we've done is tried to create formulas, special foods that complement the diet, that fill in the things that people often don't get enough of. So we have the calcium from New Zealand animal bones, our CalMag supplement, and we make a multivitamin that has all of the nutrients in their best forms. We import cod liver oil from Norway that's not refined in the usual ways and has a full complement of vitamins. We have a fermented cod liver oil. We bring in organs and glands from New Zealand, so we have liver and heart and organ combinations for people who want a supplement, a pill, capsules that give them small amounts of the animal organs every day. We do things like coenzyme Q10. What's unique about all of our things is that we don't use any of the additives. When you look at the other ingredients on the label of supplements, it always says various different things that go into the supplements as manufacturing agents. If you manufacture carefully, you can make supplements with no additives whatsoever. So we are the additive-free supplements company. We don't use any additives whatsoever. And in a nutshell, that's what we have.
Okay, that's excellent. So everybody out there, let's get to Dr. Ron. DrRons.com, his website address, have a look at some of these formulas and products and spread the good news.
There's a lot of information on the site for people to learn about these things.
Fantastic. Well, I know education is your strength as an author. And like I told you, this book, Traditional Foods Are Your Best Medicine, I met you through your work just after you released the book, and I've probably turned, I don't know, 1,000 people onto it. It's just a great piece. But besides my formal education, I was able to meet people like Dr. Pavel Rola, Bernard Jensen, Paul Bragg, Vogel, Pauling. You know, I met you through your work. Now, these pioneers, they're fading away. Some of them are gone now, and maybe there's a new stock coming through, but what is your take on the industry today? There's less food in the health food stores. It's very technical. There's very little education. There's certainly no mandatory education. What is the future of our wonderful, incredible health food industry?
I think the future is the farms. And if we don't save the farms, then there's really not going to be anything much worth saving. I think people need to support small farms and get out there and learn more about that. Weston A. Price Foundation is a great source for that, westonaprice.org, spelled the way it sounds, westonaprice.org, and learn where there are small farms. Talk to chapter leaders from the foundation. There are chapter leaders all over the country. And get out to small farms and buy the meat and find a place to get raw milk and connect that way, and let the health food stores know that they need to be supporting small farmers also and carrying farm fresh foods, because that's really where health comes from. You don't get health by and large out of a jar. You got to find good food. The best things in the jars can complement that, but they have to work together. So we really have to get behind the farmers.
Fantastic. Dr. Ronald Schmidt is the naturopathic physician. He is a well-known author, a great teacher and educator. And Ron, we thank you very much for sparing your time to help us understand the meaning and value of natural whole foods and why we need to stay well.
Thanks, Corey. It's been a pleasure. Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.